Hey guys, welcome to Hippocrats Podcast. I am here with Kendon Farr. How's it going, man?
It's going really well. It's a Sunday afternoon. I've only been dressed for the last 20 minutes, and I've spent most of it assembling a plastic tank, which I will be painting sometime in the beginning of next week. So yeah, it's a fairly uneventful end to the weekend. What about you? Are you doing anything fun and exciting?
No, today's the 4th of July, so it's our. We'll be watching some fireworks later and.
Happy Independence Day and all that.
Yeah, thanks.
Overthrew your colonial masters. Not that we're bitter.
Ironic that we're doing this today, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not that we're going to hold it. I will make constant references to, was it shirking the yoke of British rule? But never mind. No, we ought to move on to Brighton. But yeah, so happy. I mean, I celebrate the 4th of July in America, and you do it properly, so I admire all that. Firework display. Good stuff. All right then. Yeah. Well, I just have to tamp down my business and just look forward to the future. So
we obviously have very different governments and the way they're run, and I know the culture is completely different, or I'm sure it's similar in a lot of ways. But I first saw you on TikTok. For those of you who don't know Kendon, his name is Kendon Farr on TikTok, and He blew up. I mean, just common sense content. Everybody loves to hear what he has to say. Everything he says makes complete sense. He says it very eloquently. It's just simple. Definitely go follow him if you do not follow him. I'm sure all of you that listen to my podcast already do. But
thank you very much for the plug, Scott. But I think as well, because I'm slightly milder than you are, I mean, I'm not wing as you are, for example, but I think a lot of my stuff. I mean, this is just sad. This is sad. He has been punished. And I'm surprised.
She's mild too.
Yeah, well, yes, but she's mild about most things. But when she crosses into the blood and color topics, that's when the ethno-national smell blood in the water. And that's when they start.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's the same. Anybody who talks about that topic just gets viciously attacked, you know? Hmm. That is just so much emotion built up in that topic that people will just go to whatever extent possible you up.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, this is it. I mean, I've flirted with the topic because although I have, I mean, you could probably guess what my politics are with regard to that issue anyway. But because I'm obviously based in the UK where the racial conversation is different. I mean, we do have a history of racism in this country. Every country has a history of racism to some degree.
Yeah.
Profit massively from the transatlantic slave trade, so it's not like our hands are clean, but the conversation is different for us. So when I start talking about that subject, I can only really talk about the peripheral topics. I can't get into the meat of the matter. So people talk about, you know, this just from watching, you know, or from your For You page, it must be the number of people espousing viewpoints about, you know, these are separatists speaking like Nazis. They talk like white nationalists, and you go, it's not better just because you have dark skin, man. Not how this works. You're still playing with the same tropes. You're still playing political mechanics of a far right ethno-nationalist. So, but again, they get a pass because they have dark skin, I think. And I think that's, it's dangerous, and it must be policed, I think.
Yeah, I make very similar. I compare them to the KKK. I compare them to Adolf Hitler and the way that they try to push their ideology onto people. You know, they are almost identical in the methods. And when you bring that up, oh man, they just flip out. They do not want to be compared. You know, because that's their enemies, but they're just like them. And
I agree completely. I mean, obviously, I don't actually mind if people have unpleasant, disgusting views about any topic. I mean, it's not my job to police people's thoughts. What it is our job to do is to police people's actions. So if you want to get together with, your mates and just sit in a room and say rude things about different colored people, then that's actually your right. And you are entitled to express your opinion on various platforms. But what you don't get to do is not only force the opinion on other people's, down in other people's throats, but also silence all dissent. Because that's how you know that you're wrong. You know, anything I can't discuss is bullshit. Anything I can't discuss is bullshit. So if I'm wrong, then surely you would allow me to speak, and then you'd be able to tear me to pieces, which is fine, because that's the price you pay for free speech, right? But yep. Yeah, they're not interested in that. They just know it's our way or the highway. Well, yep. Fuck you then.
They don't want your opinion. They want to silence your opinion. You know, actually, me and African Hippie are going to be doing a conversation with a woman who I guess is starting to get really popular. Her name's Team Good Guy. And basically, like, she's saying, because her side is very left wing, and she's saying that they're the patriotic side. They're the side that cares about this country. And we brought up how cancel culture is terrible for people. And she's like, no, cancel culture is necessary for finding the truth. And, you know, it's just completely different ideologies than us. And, you know, if you think about that, that's exactly what Adolf Hitler and everybody did. You know, they silence certain people so that way they can get their version out, and then you'd believe it's the truth. And that's the scary part, is we're actually starting to allow that to happen. That was one of the things in our country that we, you know, wrote in to not make possible. So It's just crazy how we're turning around and we're allowing our country to become so controlled.
Yes. I think it's because, if I may be bold, it's because people, and it's not just the left, because we have to be very mindful, because the far left is a problem, but so is the far right, and they do exactly the same thing. They don't believe in objective truth. They don't believe in these things. They believe that there is a subjective truth and that their truth is the best one. So, we don't need to talk about race relations. We don't need to talk about poverty. We don't need to talk about general government, because we've solved all that. So all dissenting voices are from stupid, ignorant, or power hungry who want to preserve their own privilege. Mm-hmm. And both extremes do this. The neo-Nazis are the same. Neo-Nazis don't believe in democracy and free speech either. The difference is that, and it's true for Britain as much as it is America, we've been trained as populations to see prejudice on the far right, and we obviously hate it for good reason. But we haven't been trained to see bigotry, prejudice, and left. We haven't been trained to see it as deadly or dangerous. It is. We're blind to one side of the argument. And this explains why, I mean, it's definitely true in Britain, and I'm guessing it's true in America, the culture is drifting more to the right. It's becoming more sort of small C conservative, because people are rightly afraid of this stuff and they don't want to lose what little they have.
What right wing?
Well, the left-right axis is a bit of a problem, because, of course,
there's so many different ones. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, left is reform. Right is conservative. So it's possible, like, for example, if you were to drill deep into my politics and I were to talk about social issues or the economy or whatever, you'd think I was dirty liberal, because in American terms, I am. The American culture is further right wing anyway. Yeah. But in British terms, I'm conservative. So you've got left is reform, right is conservative, but then you've also got libertarian and authoritarian, which is the other axis. And so it's possible to be a right-wing libertarian and also a left-wing authoritarian. You can mix and match. People are varying degrees of these combinations. I don't know if you've ever seen, there's a famous scatter graph that's been doing the rounds on the internet where they plot, you know, Adolf Hitler, Maggie Thatcher, Bernie Sanders, Ben Shapiro on this scatter graph. Political figures all throughout history, and obviously they cover the board. So, you know, you've got someone like Stalin, who's effectively a left-wing authoritarian, and then you've got someone who, like, I don't know, Alex Jones of InfoWars, who I guess you would describe as a right-wing libertarian, you know. So it's a bit of a, you know, it's a bit of a blend. So that's a general rule, then, to answer the question. Left is reformist and right is conservative. And we're all sort of left or right-wing on various issues. I don't think it's really rare to find a purely right-wing or purely left-wing person.
I have, because there's so many different spectrums. There's so many different ways that you can say left or right. When people say left or right, you really don't know what they mean, especially when, like you said, we're from different countries. It can mean very different things. Me being a conservative could be different than you being a conservative. We're trying to conserve, you know? And, so I always say left wing is more government control, right wing's less government control. So farthest right wing would be, you'd be no government at all, and then the farthest left wing would be like communism, you know. So that's kind of spectrum. So when I talk about certain issues, what's that?
No. I was just going to chip in there. I was saying, like, you know, see, someone like Adolf Hitler, for example, would be a right wing authoritarian, whereas someone like Stalin would be a left wing authoritarian. But they both believe in big government. This is the problem.
In my spectrum, Hitler would be left-wing, because he used more government control. He used government control to take over the country, essentially, to take over the people, to control the people.
Yeah, know, I mean, this is why I get into arguments with people on the TikTok or on the YouTubes when I say that Adolf Hitler was a socialist, and all I've got to do is post that on like a Facebook thread or something, and the internet explodes. It's like, how can you say Adolf Hitler was a socialist? Bernie Sanders is a socialist. And I go, yeah, Bernie Sanders is a socialist. But that's because we're only talking about money. Bernie Sanders could never be a Nazi for one very big reason that I hope is obvious to everybody. You know, if it's not obvious, honestly, they need to read books, really. But socialism is an economic model. That's all it is. Yep. And any moral value you place upon it is entirely imposed. It's not inherent in the taxation and distribution of wealth. I'm afraid you're kind of, he's left wing economically, but he's right wing culturally and nationally, which is why I did my I don't know if you've seen my TikTok where I actually explain my sort of like watershed moment where I read the autobiography of the Nazi German and Mein Kampf. I can say that.
I read that as well.
But you just read it and you go, this guy, I mean, okay, he doesn't really like communists and he doesn't really like
Jews.
But he does like Marxism. He likes the fundamental principles of Marxism. He believes in the class struggle. He believes that the state should regulate economies to benefit the race, ultimately. But he believes in high state regulation and all sorts of things. So I'm like, this guy's a Marxist. He believes in, and you just think, why is this never mentioned? Is this never broadcast? Could it possibly be because lots of lefty people would get very, very upset and they would lose the moral high ground if you associated them with, you know, the most genocidal tyrant in European history? Nah, can't be that at all. No.
Majority of the people that try to cancel my stuff, the majority of the people that try to argue against my stuff, all are Marxists in their profiles. Yeah. They all go by comrade, and it's just ridiculous and scary how strong communism, the idea of communism, is growing in this country.
The trouble is though that, I mean, in your world, in your country, and also in mine, they're all plastic commies anyway. I mean, they're all fat, ugly, middle class white boys living in the suburbs. You know, they're just armchair. And they've read some Bakunin, and they've read some Kropotkin, and they've read some Marx, and maybe some Trotsky, and they all get onto the same forums, the forums that have this hammer and sickle all over the homepage, and they start arguing the toss about everything. And you go, you guys, you know, you're full of theory, but you're only like 20 years old. You have no life experience.
Yep.
Go out into the world. I'm not suggesting that you're wrong about everything. You know, there's truth on all sides in these things. But you need to temper theory with life experience, which is what I think we all have to do eventually. It doesn't matter where we come from politically. And they haven't done that yet. Unfortunately, because they're the biggest market for things like TikTok, you know, they hold sway. So a lot of people who disagree with Marxist theories or neo-Marxist theories get punted off the platforms. And unfortunately, Marxism is being applied to race now, which is that's a different topic. But this is where this is savvy got caught. I'm surprised that your Lady Love, congratulations by the way, your Lady Love African hippie hasn't been kicked off the platform yet. She survived somehow.
Yeah, I don't think she's even been banned yet for a 7-day ban, which is crazy.
That is, well, I mean, why has she not drawn the attention of the fold?
So she has. Oh, she gets attacked by the fold all the time.
All right.
Yeah. Actually, they're the ones that started this whole thing with me in my criminal history getting exposed on here. I mean, I've talked about my criminal history on my podcast and previous videos and stuff like that, but they're the ones that released like the everything for everybody to see. And it's kind of funny because a fold member, black guy who's dating a white girl, was giving my girlfriend crap that she's black dating a white guy, saying that she doesn't love herself and that she's dating a colonizer and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, you don't find this hypocritical? You're with a white girl, you know?
Find it hypocritical, Scott, is because you're sane and reasonably grounded, right? Whereas these people are complete lunatics and they live in their own little world. So the problem is that the way they justify this is that he is a black man taking revenge on the white race by mating with a white woman and therefore creating mixed race children and thereby diluting the white genes. Whereas your black girlfriend is only dating a white man because she's been subconsciously programmed to hate her skin and therefore is drawn to white masters. That's the... No, seriously, go read some of this shit. It's hilarious. I know.
It's crazy.
Why are you are you seriously trying to impose blood and honor laws? Is that where we're going with this? It's like, no, this is naught. It's wrong. Stop. And it'll all bite them eventually.
But she made a video because obviously I called him out and that's why he got angry and exposed my stuff. But she got angry and made a video going, I know place and I know when to shut up and let him talk. And I'm just like, wow, like you guys must have a lovely relationship. Like, oh man, this is, you know, which relationship sounds more healthy, me and my girlfriend just freely speaking as we want, supporting each other, or you guys who has like a dom and a sub relationship going on here, like you shut up and I'm gonna say what I say. Yes sir, you know, like, well, no, it's ridiculous.
It's a bit of a strange one for me because I'm the sort of person who, I try, as I say, I believe in freedom, I believe in diversity of ideas, I believe in all these things. But the trouble is, it's very hard sometimes because you realize that you have to make space for these creatures. I think a lot of people who don't read a lot into it, who don't watch a lot of the videos, think that you're just attacking them because they're black people. Yeah. It's like, no, it's not racially motivated. But I'll give you yesterday I stayed up until stupid o'clock in the morning to talk to a guy on YouTube called Vosh. Have you heard of Vosh?
No, I've heard about him through you, but I haven't seen any of his content.
Right, okay. Well, he's very much a lefty. He's a YouTube lefty, and he's been around for years. We were having a chat about this, and because I have deep what we call critical race theory, right? Mm-hmm. And yep. I explained to him what I thought critical race theory was, how it's sold and things like that. And he managed to point out, because he's a sociology major, he managed to point out that critical race theory is purely a diagnostic tool. It's about trying to determine whether race is a hindrance in a given situation with given individuals, given subjects, right? But we both agreed that this innocent diagnostic tool, which is a Marxist one to be fair, but it's purely a system of analysis, is being weaponized by black racists to segregate the population and to try and scrape money out of various institutions to form sort of like separatist blocks. I mean, they're going back to, this is American history, so I'm guessing you know more about this than I do. It's drifting into Nation of Islam territory, you know, yes. Creatures like Louis Farrakhan, those people,
yep.
Or as I like to call him, the Chocolate Führer. These are awful people. But that's where they're going with this. Is they want to, and the thing is that because they just present themselves as poor, beleaguered black folk who have suffered under Jim Crow and slavery, and I am slightly sympathetic to that. You know, there is such a thing. I don't believe generational trauma is as widespread as the left makes it out to be, but it can affect communities. It does. They're milking it. They're milking it to try and squeeze pity cash out of. And so if you go against, particularly if you market yourself as a conservative, as we both do, you look like the villain. And that we need to shut that down. We need to shut it down at some, or at least expose it, and then let the public make their decision.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of people, a lot of Black Lives Matter members who have reparations, you know, send me reparations in their bio, you know, send them to my Cash App, and it's just like, what did you go through?
Exactly. If you're saying these creatures on the internet, white man still profits from slavery. It's like, aren't you profiting from slavery? But you, a person who has never been in chains, has only ever worked for a salary or a wage, are going to strangers on the internet with an online begging bowl, asking guilty white liberals to fill it. I mean, are you not exploiting the misery of your ancestors for personal profit? I would argue yes.
If their ancestors were even slaves, we don't even know. They don't even know.
Well, you see, Scott, now you're going, now you've turned to the dark side. You have to go up to these people and say, you're not actually necessarily descended from slaves. Or, you know, because the other argument as well is, as I think Savvy's talked about this on her channel, is if you are mixed race, but present as a black person, as a, with dark skin, you are, you could be 50% white. Does that mean you're only entitled like 50% reparations?
Yep.
Are you not also, just as you and I are pink people, we look like boiled ham, are these mixed race people not also responsible in part for offering reparations? Maybe half as much, but they're also descended from white people. And if not, how did you come to that conclusion? This is why reparations is a really dangerous topic. It's really fiddly, yep, because you could end up splitting hairs to the point where nothing actually gets solved.
Oh, exactly. It's almost impossible to solve in general, period. You know, it is as pointless to talk about people paying money to people that, you know, we have just based on skin color alone. This is a racist idea.
And exactly. And this is why the weaponization of critical race theory, which Vosh and I agreed last yesterday was wrong, is such a dangerous idea, because whereas the original academic application of critical race theory is part of what they call multivariate analysis. So yeah, you consider inequalities, you consider institutional racism, stuff like that, but it's not the only metric. You have to look at class, age, location, education, yeah, IQ. Also, what if you're bloody lazy? I mean, what if you're lazy? That's a personal flaw. I mean, it's not true that all poor people are lazy, but that could be a factor. The weaponized CRT has nothing to say about this.
No. You know, I bring that up all the time. I don't bring it up in the idea of CRT. I bring it up in the idea of systemic racism and the outcomes of different demographics. And people say it's because of systemic racism. I was like, no, that's one possible variable out of hundreds. You know, and that's the one you guys are banking off of. You know, and that's because that's the only variable that takes away the accountability, and that's why all the other variables put the accountability on the person, other than it's systemic racism. That's the only one that takes it away, and that's why you guys bank on that one so much.
Well, yeah, and it's the one, they can weaponize it, they can squeeze money out of government programs with it, they get to present themselves as the victims, even if they're not the victims of anything direct, if they don't take any personal responsibility for their own flaws, because we're all flawed, we all have faults of personality or whatever, but this way they get to project it all, and they get to make themselves perfect. And also, the most enjoyable thing for them all is, of course, they get to break stuff. Because it's really hard to fix. But it's really hard to fix social problems, and it's really quiet and fit. Whereas if you break stuff and set things on fire, you get photographs, you get press attention, you get to enter the history books. That's far more
free shoes than and TVs.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's not Target's not going to rob itself, is it, Scott? Let's put something. You have to put the effort in.
And then every time that happens, they blame it on white supremacy, too. You know, they say, oh, no, white supremacists started and we just followed along. It's like, what? You know, all the police started this and we just followed along. It's like, you guys realize you're in the pictures, you're in the videos, you're doing it, right?
I mean, and it's, they're all, I mean, the trouble is that there are sincere people who want reform, who want a conversation, but they are being misled by bad actors or being distracted by bad actors, and those bad actors tend to be the loudest on platforms like TikTok and YouTube. And as I was saying to Vosh yesterday, I know I keep bringing him up, but you know, it's funny because we're talking about the same thing, is that there's a white response. And what's happening is that now you've got black nationalists and black racists who are leaping onto this stuff. There are white nationalists who are also using the same tactics and trying to take, and this is why politics, I think, has been polarized, not both in America and in the UK. It's that extremists on both sides of the argument are sort of pulling the sides apart to try for their own purposes. So, yeah, I mean, that's what we have to do. We have to police, as much as we like policing the black separatists and the black racists, we need to police the white racists as well, which we do to hopefully successfully. But It's going to be a fun time. It's going to be a fun time, Scott. And I don't know where it's going to end, but we should have a lot of fun with the way.
I used to be a member of Black Lives Matter. I used to want to fight for them and stuff like that. And the problem is, it's just like you said, it was the extremists in the group that pushed me away. Same as African hippie. You know, it's the extremists in there that just kind of come at you and they make you feel like crap. And it's just like, why am I being made feel like crap if I'm supporting you guys? And I do still want change. I do still want reform when it comes to a lot of things. You know, those are the things I push for, but I'm not pushing for it with a group that I believe is a hate group. You know, I can do it on my own without them.
Yes. I mean, I have some for you being ELM because I also have a history of mental illness, so I have some sympathy. No, BLM, I mean, BLM, you know, they're very good at marketing. This is the thing. Yep. It's like BLM, their slogan, I mean, you can't really argue with the slogan. It's like, of course, Black Lives Matter. They matter as much or as little as white lives do. That's perfectly reasonable. But then you look at the institution itself, the organization that's born, and whilst the organization is corrupt as hell.
Yes.
I mean, recently, you know, we've got the stories about the founders who managed to buy like a couple of properties with the money they've raised. And what was the other thing as well? Yeah, when you go in on PragerU looked into this, but their public website, if you went on their about page way back in the midst of time, they were talking about ending capitalism and ending the nuclear family. And it's like, what's that got to do with police brutality? And you go, I see. You're using black misery as a wedge issue to drive in all these other reforms that no one in their right mind really agrees with, slippery sods. So that's why I abandoned them. And I also noticed that the about page has changed. They've removed all that stuff because they've been caught out. But that's why I don't support BLM, because I'm not a rabid socialist, despite what people might say on the internet. I don't want any of that stuff. But that BLM are exploiting public sentiment for personal private profit, and that makes them evil, as far as I'm concerned. They're no help to anybody, least of all black communities, who have not seen a penny of any of the money that's been raised by BLM.
They're very counterproductive. If anything, they're just raising up the emotions of the community, making them more hateful, which is what they want to do.
Yeah, of course, because then you get angry. On the front line, you get legions of angry shock troops who you could send into battle against, armed police officers. I mean, it's only a matter of blood. I actually admire the restraint, because it could have gone a lot worse. You know, with all the rioting that has been happening in Portland and other areas, it could have gone a lot worse, and you could have had more bodies on the pavement. And fortunately, that didn't happen, and because that would have tipped everything over, I think. But I reckon that's what they were hoping for. I think there were elements within BLM that wanted bloodshed because they knew they could use it as an excuse.
I have a friend in the police force that, I don't know if you've heard of Kyle Rittenhouse here in America. He was a guy he had an AR-15, defended himself against three people, and had like a $100,000 bond or something. No?
No, I don't remember.
So it was during a Black Lives Matter rally. People were lighting car dealers on fire, like, all the cars, the buildings. And he stood by a place with a friend that wanted to protect like a car dealership or some business. So they all stood there with their AR-15s and whatever guns they had to try and protect it. Well, later on, he got attacked or provoked, and he shot one person that was attacking him. And then he was trying to run away, and then other people were trying to chase him down, and he lost his balance. They tried to attack him with skateboards and knives and guns, and he shot another one, kept running away again, and he ended up turning himself in. And there's this big controversy here that because a lot of the people on the left want him put away for murder, and the people on the right are complaining, they're saying he was defending himself. And so there's big controversy there. Well, anyways, the actual Black Lives Matter rally that happened here, I have one of my friends was one of the police officers that was at this multi-day burning, that they basically had. And he said, you go to these car dealerships and every single car was on fire, every single one. They didn't let any of them go. They were just burning down these buildings, burning down these cars. And he said that the police force, because of everything that's been going on between, the news media and them saying that police are racist and so on and so forth, basically what they're telling our police force to do now is anytime they see somebody commit a crime, to not chase them, to just let them go. Because they don't want to get sued. They don't want any issues. These people are fighting for this, and they're basically allowing more crime to happen and for us just to stop fighting against it. Just because we're afraid of the racial consequences that could happen.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that you're part of the world, Scott, is a more litigious culture. So you are, there are problems like that we in, my soggy misery of Britain, we don't have to worry about this quite so much. You're still there, Scott?
Yeah, I'm here. Do you guys have issues like that with like any racial tension with police officers? And like, do you guys?
Oh yeah, we've got we have a history of sort of like racist policing. I mean, as I've said to many people, my grandfather used to say, "I'm not racially prejudiced. I hate all the bastards equally." And he was a policeman at the London Met. So you know, we have a rich history of anti-black sentiment in our police force, but it's that you're dealing with. We also have various measures in place to prevent sort of like racial bias in policing, because as we all agree, you can't have those kinds of people, especially of course, police officers are not armed.
Yeah.
So it's less of a problem. But armed response units, and they are heavily scrutinized in case, you know, because if you pop off a round, you have to account for it and things like that. Yeah. But yeah, we've had riots. Like I remember in August 2011, so going back 10 years, I can't even believe it was 10 years. We had riots because a poor black lad got shot in North London because he was sitting in a car. I don't even know if he needed to be shot or not, but that sparked like nationwide riots all over the country, and the cities were on fire. You know, Birmingham was on fire, Manchester, I think, was on burning, and not as badly as has been presented in America. Still, we have because, as I said before, Britain profited from the transatlantic slave trade. We've had various waves of immigrants coming to the country, and their stuff in British culture wasn't always stable and wasn't always welcoming and friendly. So, yeah, that we do. But I mean, I can't imagine what would firearms. If we had firearms, it'd be a dance, I suppose. But yeah,
what are your opinions on firearms? I know that's one cultural difference between us. That's something that I'd like to get into topic-wise.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the thing is that whenever I go to America, I obviously, you know, go through the airport and you see some fat security guard with Homeland Security with a Magnum on his thigh, and it's as big as his thigh. So it's massive. It looks like something out of a video game. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I remember that. I still remember the first time I saw come off the plane in Washington, D.C. No, Baltimore. I'd come off the plane at Baltimore, and I saw this big fat customs official with a Magnum on his hip. And it was the first time I'd ever seen a firearm in real life. Because I wasn't raised in a gun culture, I don't really see the need for them, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I wasn't raised in a situation that I should have one of those things. I have no objection to the Second Amendment with, you know, to like private security. Like, you know, if a woman wants to keep a pistol in her handbag, or, you know, farmers might well have rifles and shotguns and pistols. I kind of see the logic of it. I still don't quite understand why, you know, civilians need machine guns. So it's a weird one. I don't quite see why Joe Blow six pack, who has no military training, has never seen combat, needs military ordnance. I don't quite see the logic.
Automatics are actually illegal for citizens. You have to have a special permit for it, that usually the military or whatever, you can get one. But yeah, automatics are illegal for citizens in America. So everything here that's legal is semi-automatic bolt action. So it's one pull of the finger, one shot.
Yeah. Okay. That's not so bad. But yeah, I mean, I must admit, because we do receive your news stories about people walking and people, you know, climbing clock towers on college campuses, and there was the Las Vegas shooting. How many people died in the Las Vegas shooting?
Was it like 51, 52, I think.
Yeah, and like 400 people wounded or something stupid. Yeah, you know? And yeah. When British people see that sort of thing, maybe not have so many guns around. Maybe, you know, yeah, I mean, this is it. I mean, the trouble is that it's such an evocative issue, because guns make loud noises and people, you know, end up with bullet wounds, and it all looks very horrible. But more people die in car accidents in your country than die from gunshots. And like, nobody even thinks about banning automobiles.
yeah.
Yeah, because you're in Wisconsin, aren't you? You're a Midwestern boy. What are the gun laws like? Is it like a concealed carry state? Is it open carry?
Here it is. So some states, you don't require a license to be concealed carry. Some do. Mine does. So you have to take a course and everything in order to conceal carry. But you can open carry in every state legally.
Okay.
But there's certain places that consider themselves gun-free zones, so they just don't allow guns on their property, which is their right. You know, it's private business or whatever. But that's typically where the shootings always happen. It's always in the gun-free zones where there's nobody's supposed to be carrying guns, so nobody can defend themselves, you know. So it's they make the easiest targets. And so, you know, I guess coming from your perspective, you know, a lot of the people here in America, the left, what they really want to do is they just want to confiscate guns, you know, which I don't think would be possible. And the problem that we have is because we don't really have a gun registry. So if I bought a gun, I would have to register it if it's from the dealership. So the register, they'd have my serial number of my gun on the registry or whatever. Well, then I could sell it to anybody I want. It wouldn't have to get registered again. So it could pass down through 5 or 6 different people and nobody would know where that gun is. And if the police ever came, if that gun ever happened in a crime, the police would come after me if I was the original person who bought it, and they would have to have a bill of sale and say I sold it to this person. They'd have to go down the line and try and find out who has this gun now. And it just makes it very easy to buy guns. And, you know, that's, to me, that's no big deal. You know, I don't mind that. The issue is that we have so many guns that were never on a registry ever. You know, we have, what was it, like 300 million guns or something? We have just as many guns as we do people here. And there's no way to track them. So if you ever wanted to confiscate guns, you have no way of finding all of them ever. You know, even if people were to just willingly let you come get them, you have no way of tracking them. So eventually, you know, you're just leaving a lot of people vulnerable.
Well, this is it. I mean, you know, only nice law-abiding citizens are going to turn their guns in, aren't they? But this is, a lot of this stuff is vote winning. A lot of, you know, they're canvassing votes, and it's closing the door after the horse has bolted, to use the old adage. The problem's out in the world now, and so reclaiming guns won't solve anything. It would reduce gun deaths, of course, because there are fewer guns around. But I don't think, it's not as... The problem I have with the anti-gun lobby in your country is that they are emotional, romantic. They think that if all the guns disappear, there'd be fewer guns and would be nicer to each other. The truth of the matter, I think, is that, okay, you might, you know, law-abiding people in the suburbs might turn in their weapons, but all the guns in the hands of desperate crime-ridden areas would remain because people would just hide them. And so in certain areas of the country, you're still going to have horrendous numbers of gun deaths, and your buyback scheme has achieved nothing. So you punish... Scott with his, you know, dairy farm out in Wisconsin, he turns his rifle in. Rifle, but people in, I don't know, slums in inner city Detroit are still going to be killing each other with pistols. So really, what have you actually accomplished? The answer is nothing. This is why I think it's a tragedy, but I don't know. I mean, more importantly, you can ask for it all you want, but the Second Amendment is like probably the most beloved of all the amendments in your country after the first one, you know?
Yep.
So the idea that anyone's going to pass it through, you know, the two houses of your government, it's not going to happen, is it? No. It's not even worth entertaining. Both parties are pro-gun, and that's the end of the conversation, I would reckon. But, you obviously see it because see it from the American perspective, but I mean, I've no idea.
We have gun kits you can buy where they're like 70-80% finished, and then you just have to add a few bits or machine a few bits, and then you have a gun with no registered license number on it, you know, and that's legal. It's legal to do that. So, I mean, there's so many ways to get guns here, and the same people that want to restrict the gun laws also want to keep the borders open, and a lot of the illegal guns with no serial numbers are coming across the border from Mexico. So, I mean, no matter what, there's going to be guns. It does not matter how you try to regulate it. There's going to be guns. They're just going to be illegal now. That's it, you know? Mm. And they're going to be in bad hands, obviously. Criminals are going to be the ones that are buying illegal products.
Yeah, of course. And but this is why, but this is the other thing. This is what happens when you allow very, very young, squeaky people with big, wide eyes and big ideas to, of course, I mean, border. Yeah. It's just ridiculous, right? And you can't have a welfare state with open borders. You can't have a national government without open borders. You can't have an immigration policy of any kind with open borders. You have no way of tracking your pop, because you do need to track your populations to find out, you know, just to determine economic trends. You can't do that with open borders. As you've pointed out, criminals will then be able to flood across the border doing whatever they want to do, shipping drugs, shipping guns, or shipping people, because people trafficking is a
huge market.
Human trafficking is a problem. Yeah, exactly. Yep. So if you talk to some squeaky 20-year-old college kid who's been bombarded with Marxist nonsense for, you know, the last like 4 or 5 years and hangs around on internet chat rooms talking to other lefty lunatics, stuff they're going to talk about. And so you end up wasting your time discussing stupid ideas that are A, never going to happen, or B, even if you could make it happen, would be disastrous. Like defund the police. Defund the Police is another one that's come from like left. It's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
If you didn't have a police force in any part of your country, you would notice.
So I usually ask this for everybody I do on my podcast. Have your political views changed dramatically over time? Have they always been like this? Like, well, what's your political story, your background?
Well, I mean, my political views have changed. I mean, scratch a mild conservative and you'll find a disappointed liberal. I mean, that's pretty much what I am. Exactly. I mean, when I was a kid, my first ever general, we call them general elections in the UK. My first ever time I got to vote in a general election, I voted for the Green Party, which is like basically eco-communism. And I've slowly drifted. I've gone from eco-communist, even though I never lived a green life, I was gone from eco-communism through the Labour Party, through the Liberal Democrats who were centre-left. And then eventually, about the time of Brexit, I recognised that a lot of my private politics, because you know that I'm pretty much not so much pro-life, but anti-choice when it comes to abortion, for example. Yeah. A lot of these things I'd been sitting on, left-wing parties weren't a natural home for me. But the thing that really did my head in, the thing that really broke me, was the Brexit debate in 2016. Because when the Remain campaign, because I voted Remain in the Brexit campaign, I wasn't a Leaver. The Remain campaign started insulting all of the Leavers. They're all racist, they're bigots, they're all Nazis, they're fascist enablers. And they started censoring free speech. You weren't allowed to talk about it. And I realized that the left was more censorious than the right. And so as a natural liberal, as someone who is liberal-minded in a lot of respects still, I believe in the sovereignty of the individual. And there's not a single left-wing party in the UK that does. And so I've basically admitted to myself that I am a mild conservative, and I've been voting right-wing ever since, and I can't see myself ever going back.
Yep. Yeah, same here. I was a collectivist and realized that that's not where it's at. Individualism is where it's at, and there's only one party that really believes in that. So, yeah, it took a while. It took a lot to open up my eyes as well. It took being treated a certain way because of the color of my skin and the way I look, even though I'm supporting the same group as them. It's like, why are you guys turning against me? I'm on your side. You know, I didn't know enough about politics in the first place. And that's when I started to actually like research and look. And I was like, wow, these are the a-holes who are basically just hypocritical as hell. And, you know, that's when I started to do my own research. And I actually became pretty far right wing. I was still a sheep. You know, I believed everything they told me on the left, and I ran with it. And then when I switched sides, I believed everything they told me on the right, and then I ran with that. And it took me just getting beaten and battered by all these different people and people who are open-minded and free-thinking to just be like, you realize what? Tell me, why do you believe in this? What's your logic behind it? And I didn't have any. It's because I was told to, you know. And it took a while to just get me to the point where I'm like, I need to start thinking for myself. I need to start researching this shit so I don't look like an idiot all the time. You know, it was quite a few years ago, but you know, this is where I am now.
But I think, that's fine and good and healthy, to be honest. I mean, the trouble is that it's very hard to think originally when there is no diversity of opinion when you study this stuff. I mean, when I said to people that I think, you know, I'll give you an example that's an American example, because I mean, it's one that you would understand better, I think. Charlottesville, Virginia, back in 2017, there was a march by American neo-Nazis, and they went marching and they had their little flags and they said, you know, we're proud National Socialists, blah, blah, blah. And I was saying to people at the time that I had no objection to those people marching through Charlottesville. And everyone looked at me. Yeah, exactly. And everyone looked at me like I'd gone mad. And I said, no, I don't agree with their politics. I think they're all racist morons and they should really learn to read. But the price of free speech, the price of democracy, is that you have to tolerate people who think differently from you. And that includes people who think radically differently from you. But if you, of course, like them, you've been immersed in this kind of weird quasi-socialist, definitely neo-Marxist ideology, where there is no diversity of thought, you don't have to tolerate other people's opinions, because other people's opinions are just wrong. And so you sort of expose, they're not trained to think, they're trained to absorb, digest, and then regurgitate. They don't actually think, they're metacognition. They're not thinking about their own thinking. And I find that, I mean, it's not a universal truth, of course. There are intelligent, free-thinking lefties, and we have to bear that in mind. But those are the people I want to talk to. But unfortunately, they're being swamped by fanatics, fist waving fanatics who are not doing anyone any favors, least of all themselves. I would maintain.
Yeah, my theory behind this is I'm a huge anti-pride guy when it comes to a lot of things. My theory is it's all due to the pride. It's all due to empowerment through pride. You know, so these groups of people are taught to feel that they are victims to other people, and they are empowered through their identity. And when they're empowered, they're taught to be prideful. And when you're prideful, you're most emotional. And when you're most emotional, you're the easiest to manipulate. And that's how these people stay in these groups without actually thinking for themselves, and why they listen so much. You know, that's why BLM and the Fold and these white nationalist groups, they're all the exact same thing. They're just a bunch of emotionally driven people who are empowered through pride that don't need to think for themselves. They're being told what to believe, and because they're at their emotional peak, they believe it, and they'll be biased, and it's so hard to sway them because they're so emotional. The more emotional you are, the harder it is to be rational, right? You can either be rational, you can be emotional, or you're right in the middle with your critical thinking. But and if they keep them emotional, they will not be swayed. Their biases will continue to go that way. It's when you take that emotion out of the equation, and then you can hit them with the rationality, and then they actually clicks.
But
keeping them emotional is a weapon, and that's so our news does that. That's why the news is always, oh my God, they're attacking this person because he's black. Oh, they're doing this because they're Democrat or Republican. You know, I mean, it's on both sides, and they both do it. But they try to keep you like freaked out. They try to keep you fearful. They try to keep you angry. You know, because when you're at your emotional peak, you will follow them because you're not going to think rationally.
Yes, because I mean, emotion. Well, I mean, human beings aren't rational instinctively. We have to be taught to think. We have to be taught, to start, not so much how to think, but to start thinking. And as someone who used to be a high school teacher, I used to say to the kids when we were doing like essay writing and things like that, we were learning how to structure arguments. I said, your conclusion is always wrong. That was the first rule. Your conclusion is always wrong. And they go, well, how do you mean, sir? And I go, well, because there's always something that you've missed. There's always another perspective that you haven't heard. And so even if it's not wrong, it's at least incomplete. And therefore, you have to be open to the possibility that your conclusion needs to radically change, including mine. You know, and I used to have conversations, particularly because high schools work slightly differently in the UK. We used to have like seminar discussions with like 17 and 18 year olds. And like an 18 year old would stick their hand in the air, like nervously, and say, sir, I don't quite agree, understand this. And we would have a chat. And in front of the entire room, I would concede that this 18-year-old student had come up with an idea that I had not considered. And the kids thought this was really weird at first. I was like, yeah, but do you see how we got there? Do you see why I have to acknowledge that point of view? Because we're used to the same source material, because I was an English teacher, so we're all reading the same book. He's come to it with it. We've established definitions. He's done with a different interpretation. Therefore, I can't touch it. Logically, it makes perfect sense. And of course, all the other kids would just write that idea down, because then they could steal it for their own essays, right? But that's the point. That's what you have to do. Is read broadly, watch broadly, listen to diverse opinions. And obviously there are some that you're more likely to be sympathetic to, but at least as long as you can track the logic, it's easy to, but as you've pointed out, that's cool, calm, cold, rational intelligence, which forces you to stop and think about it, because it's actually a form of introspection. These forces on the far left and on the far right don't want people to think. Because if they think, they can't be herded like cattle. You know, there's a reason why rioters shout and scream and break things. It's because they've abandoned reason. Their emotions have overwhelmed their prefrontal cortex, cortices, or however the plural is for that one. And that's when they can be channeled. And it's like, you know, and all these manipulators, these puppet masters say, right, you're now all angry. There's the enemy. Go kill. That's how you get cities on fire. People get shot, systems overthrown. But if you stop and think about it, and they're also trained to see anyone who doesn't look like them as the enemy. And it's true, because I'm part of the LGBT community, LGBT community. There are elements within it, particularly the upper echelons, that operate in exactly the same way. Exactly the same way. I mean, because I'm right of center, I can't get a job with charities like the Trevor Project or the Terence Higgins Trust or Stonewall, any of these big names, because my politics is wrong and I don't believe in being hysterical and wantonly destructive. So, you're right. It's like they're being trained, they're turning up the heat, they're teaching them to love themselves and not to accept any criticism. Anyone who criticizes you, Scott, is a hater. It's like, well, maybe they're right to hate you. You know, at least ask yourself that question. You know, am I doing something horrendously wrong? I mean, maybe you're not. I mean, you seem like a decent, reasonable chap. But you know, they might have a point. And if they don't have a point, that's when you can ignore them. But just to assume that they only hate you because you're black or gay or female, yes, or I don't know, disabled or an immigrant or English isn't your first language, whatever it is, whatever your particular bugbear is. It's absurd. I mean, it's a possibility, but there are many possibilities that one must entertain if one is to come to a sensible conclusion.
That's one of the things that I got on them about too, is convincing themselves that they're learning to love themselves. It's like, no, you're not. You're not learning to love yourself. You're learning to be prideful in yourself. They're completely different. You know, when you love doesn't create hate. You know, if you love yourself, you wouldn't be a hateful person. Pride creates hate. Pride creates everything that's bad, really, if you think about it. Everything stems from pride. So if you are learning to love yourself, well, then you're not going to be hateful to other people. But if you're learning to be prideful, then you are. So you're misconstruing the two. You're getting the same feeling of excitement and you know, empowerment through it. But it's a completely different emotion. One's going to spread hate. One's going to spread love. There's a difference.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, pride, you know, as I said in one of my videos, pride is one of the seven deadly sins, and it's arguably the worst, because without pride, no other sin is possible. You know, the Catholics have a point on this. And but the thing is that the reason is they don't love themselves, because if they actually loved their black skin or their sexuality or their disability even, or whatever it happens to be, if they actually loved it, then they'd be constantly basking in their own glory, wouldn't they? They wouldn't be motivated to destroy things. But because they've been trained by their masters to regard their color or their sexuality or their sex as a permanent hindrance, as a permanent ball and chain that they can never shrug off, they hate the fact that they're black or gay or disabled or female or whatever it is. And so if you draw attention to the fact that they're black, gay, disabled, whatever, or female, whatever it happens to be, they become angry, because they go, yeah, I am a victim, and you're just picking on my victimhood, and that means and that makes me angry. And that makes them weapons. They become shock troops. And that's what you have to teach. It's like, you know, have you seen, maybe you haven't seen them, it depends, because we have different For You pages. Have you seen the number of, you know, relatively small, you know, minor creators who actually post videos reaching out to white people saying, I don't hate you, do you hate me? And some of them are doing it, you know, seemingly in jest, you know, they know what the answer is. Yeah. But some of them actually seem to be doing it because they're genuinely curious. They're reaching out to they're reaching out to white people to say, do you really want to hang, is that really what you want to do? And it's like, no, of course not. And we all chip into the comment section and say, no, you know, you're fine, you're good. I mean, I assume you're a nice person. And a lot of them do seem genuinely surprised. And it's like, yeah, because you've been bombarded by negative race-baiting bullshit for like years of your life. And then when a white person comes along and points out that it's total bollocks, you assume that they're only doing it because they're closet racists, and then you begin to doubt your own programming and go, maybe I've been sold a bill of goods here. Maybe I've been sold a pack of lies. And that's when they reach out, and then they get converted. And then, of course, all the protectionists come in and say, oh, you're selling out to the white man, you're a coon, you know, blah, 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 and all this rubbish.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, we see you're doing it deliberately to shame them, to protect the rest of the flock. That's what you're doing. And we can all see it. Monsters. Anyway, sorry, I've just rambled on for about 3 minutes.
No. So I want to get on the topic of LGBT. That's one of the things I get scrutinized for here as a conservative in the United States, is that I am pro-LGBT. And, you know, there's a lot of Christian conservatives that are very anti-gay marriage and so on. And I'm like, no, you know, any person should have the freedom or right to do whatever the hell they want, as long as it does not infringe on anyone else. And two men getting married does not infringe on you, so why the hell is it a big deal? You know, that's my view on things. And the only thing that I disagree with is the pronouns being forced on people. You know, that's really where I draw my line. Where are your reservations as far as LGBT and what they're trying to accomplish?
Well, the LG, well, the but like a lot of these things, whether it was gay marriage, gay adoption, trans rights, the use of neo pronouns, all this stuff, all of this is, I now see it now. I see it for what it is. It's a wedge issue, and they're trying to, because remember, the radical types are trying to bring down the cis sexist heteronormative white supremacist capitalist patriarchy and all this rubbish, and so they will use any tool in the box to try and overthrow the dominant system. So for example, they want you to adopt neo pronouns because they want trans activists to destroy gender narratives. They wanted gay marriage and gay adoption, which I also have no problem with, gay marriage and gay adoption. They used it as a tool to destroy conventional marriage. They're also using gay marriage. This is where I lost a lot of respect to the LGBT, the political side of the community, not the rest of it. But I lost a lot of respect to the community. It's because they were only using gay marriage to get at Christians. They knew that American Christians were going to protest, and that's where the American Christians dropped the ball. Even if you don't like gay marriage, even if you don't like gay sex, even if you don't like gay adoption, what the American Christian right should have said is, you know what? We don't approve. Right? That's what they should have just said. And then the whole thing would have died. It would have died within about 2 months and we wouldn't have had this bug there, right? They should, do you know what? They should have pushed it through the Supreme Court. They should have actually passed gay marriage. It's like, yeah, we don't approve, but according to the Constitution, we, or whatever, you are entitled to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. We recognize straight marriages, et cetera, et cetera. They could have very, because marriage, the desire to be married, regardless of what the culture is, the desire to be married is a conservative impulse. You don't want to go around playing the field, sticking your willy into anything that moves. You want to choose one partner and stick with them. That's a conservative impulse. And so the conservatives could have really won over a lot of the LGBT, the rainbow movement. And you would have seen more LGBT rainbow Republicans and things like that. You know, you could have they could have really tapped that market, but they didn't. They didn't, and they dropped the ball there. And I think they've learned from that. This is why. But I mean, the trans movement, the number of people. I mean, I follow Blair White because, you know, I kind of fancy Blair White. I should be.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she is. Yeah. But no, she's amazing. But again, Blair White is very much, you know, she's not, she votes Republican. I don't know how conservative she actually is on a lot of issues. But again, that's the kind of LGBT person. I mean, I'm that kind of LGBT that you could very easily mop up. You could very easily, with moderate conservative beliefs, and just do it. But they didn't. And now the LGBT, now they'll be, have you watched, have you heard of the hashtag walk away movement and things like that?
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. The number of rainbow people who've gone, actually, the Democrats are rancid, and it's a toxic environment. They're suddenly waking up and realize they've been plugged into the gay matrix and they need to unplug. And they're all drifting across. And I think that's giving a lot of Democrats a lot of worry. But, you know, they did it to themselves, so I can't really, but I have no sympathy. Anyway, I'm not sure what the point was.
No, that's fine, man. I love it. I have a friend who was strong Democrat, and you know, she's gay, and it's actually the Tattooed Patriot on TikTok, and she said
I haven't listened to that podcast yet, but I must do. Yes,
She said she got her picture taken. She got invited to a Trump rally, and she wasn't a Trumper or anything, and she went to this rally with like an American flag on the back of a truck with Trump on it, you know. And she's one of those just like open for anything type of people, you know. She's very open-minded, you know. She had her reservations, but she's like, you know what, I'm just, whatever, you know, I'll go to this rally, I'll see what it's all about, I'll see if I'm wrong. And she said that when somebody posted it on Facebook, and she got so much hate. She said what, 90% of her rainbow friends disowned her, basically like we can't be friends anymore, I can't believe you were there. And she's like, I was just going as a guest, you know, to see what it was like. I didn't actually support it, you know, but she's realized how toxic it was. And that's what really got her to open up her mind to be like, wow, this is the side I've been siding with, you know?
Yeah, but you see, Scott, you see, she's guilty of thought crime. And therefore, she must be, because the party must purge, because she might bring dangerous ideas into the flock. And then all the other sheep start waking up from their trance. And, you know, we can't have the sheep thinking for themselves, because then they might not be herded to the slaughter. We can't have that. So naturally, she must be purged. But yeah, I mean, doesn't that, I mean, I understand it's scary, because that's happened to me, not to that extent. I mean, I was never immersed in the LGBT community enough to have a lot of gay friends. But a lot of lefty people, as soon as you mention things like, I've had Thanksgiving dinner in Maryland with Trump supporters, right? They seem nice enough. they were libertarian more than anything else. And they seemed nice enough. And we had a conversation about Trump. And I'm not a big Trumper, as I think you know, because I've made videos. Yeah, exactly. I was, I was never a big fan of the guy. But he's, but they seem nice enough. And, the idea that they're all like closet Nazis is preposterous, but that is indeed the narrative that is spun. You talk to people there's the TikToker, Victoria Hammett. Do you know Victoria Hammett? Yeah. I mean, the only reason I got started on TikTok is because I responded to one of her videos where she was talking about re-education camps or something ridiculous. And I thought, and I actually owe her a lot, to be honest, because she gave me my TikTok career. But that's what you're dealing with. That you're dealing with this kind of, they almost want to be sheep. And it's, I don't understand it. I genuinely don't get it.
I actually responded to that video of hers and it blew up. It was one of my better videos. And then they silenced my audio. I was like, what?
Thought crime.
Yep. Oh, man, this shit pisses me off. All right, man. Well, we hit an hour. So I have one last question for you before I let you go. I would actually love to get you back on here because I think there's so many more topics that we could talk about. And I'd love to hear your opinion on. You are super intelligent. You're very eloquent. I love hearing your voice. Hell?
You say I'm intelligent, but I don't believe you, but never mind. Carry on.
What the hell is a tepid Tory?
Tepid Tory. Very good. Tory is a slang term for conservative in the UK. So you'll often hear that the Conservative and Unionist Party is our right-wing party, conservatives, shortened to conservatives. A Tory is a nickname, I forget precisely how the nickname was derived, but that's what you call a and of course tepid means lukewarm. So I'm basically advertising myself as a tepid Tory to say that I'm mild conservative, mildly conservative. Okay. There you go. That's it, really. There's no mystery to that at all.
I'm curious where we actually disagree on some topics. I'm sure there are some, but so far I haven't found any.
Well, no, but I mean, the thing is, you and me, Scott, and I suppose African hippie and This Is Savvy and a lot of the sort of the people we're all banded together is that we might come from different places and we might even be different sides of the aisle. The differences between us are differences of degree rather than differences of policy. So in individual sovereignty, democracy, free market capitalism, all this sort of thing. It's just how free should the market be? Things like that. And that's nuance. That's subtlety. That's why, I had this conversation with Vosh yesterday. Vosh is an internet socialist. He's an internet lefty. But we actually, on the topic of critical race theory, we actually got on pretty well because we have different solutions, but we have different policies maybe, but the principles are remarkably similar. But of course, extremists don't want us to think that. Extremists want us to think that we're all in separate camps, miles apart, and that we can never get along. So I say, screw those people, reach out, hold hands, sing kumbaya, whatever it is you want to do, and prove them all wrong.
Hell yeah. Sounds good to me. That's a good way to end this. All right, Ken. Well, thanks, man. This is great. I really appreciate you coming on here.
No, thank you very much for inviting me. Yeah, if you can stand to have me back, then I'll gladly turn up. When do you upload these things anyway? Do you upload them instantly or?
So this one, I'm posting one this coming Friday. It will be the one I did before you. And then I'm posting yours the following week on Friday. I post these every Friday.
Okay, well, there you go. Then I feel forward to it and I'll listen to the other ones as well. But thank you very much, Scott.
No problem.
I appreciate it. And,
yes,
thanks, you take man. Care.
You have a wonderful, it's nighttime on Earth, you, right?
Well, it's 4 minutes past five, so it's still daylight. Okay. So it's too bad. I'm now going to go and cook my dinner.
I was going to say, enjoy your dinner. I just had breakfast.
Take care, so have a good time. Enjoy the 4th of July, all right?
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, take care.
Bye. Bye.